The Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny is presented for the people by Caesars Sportsbook. You bet, you get with Caesars Rewards. Must be 21 or older. Welcome back to the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast. One of the hosts thinks he could have beaten the Bulldogs because Bulldogs are slow and maybe shouldn't even exist. Don't want to offend Bulldog owners.
I had an Dominique. English Bulldog.
Yeah, you did. We've talked about this. How long did you last? RIP. Last night's game.
I made it to the third quarter, about the end. I think I made it to the beginning of the fourth. I saw them pull Stetson. That was in the beginning of the fourth, right? When they actually pulled Stetson Bennett.
I was gone by then.
Yeah. I mean, it just was on. I'm out of town, so I'm in a hotel. So it was on. It was a shellacking.
Do you think, before we get started today, any of this week's wildcard games could, I don't think any of them will approach that level of shellacking. I guess it's really contingent on if Lamar Jackson doesn't play or if Tua doesn't play.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. The Dolphins is the scarier one as far as blowout potential is concerned because that offense seems to really need Tua, and the defense isn't as good as the Ravens' defense has been recently.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
but I guess the Ravens played the Bengals sort of close with Anthony Brown. Yeah. I mean, they lost. Anthony Brown was turning it over, but he's not even Tyler Huntley. So.
Yeah, I think if you watch that game, you recognize that the Ravens played okay, pretty well, actually. But, like, the fall off from Lamar to Anthony Brown, like, more, in my view, more than made up in the point differential. You know, it was like, wow, that's a big... It's a big gap.
We're not going to talk about that game today. I'm going to do a full wild card preview later this week. We are going to talk about some winners and losers from week 18 to kind of wrap the season. But first, I wanted to talk to you about the coaching carousel. So we're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. There could be more news. There could be more coaches departing. There could be more coaching interviews. But I figured we should start with the things that we do know. Which is that there are a number of openings now. Of course, Denver, having parted ways with Nathaniel Hackett earlier in the season, is one. Indianapolis, Frank Reich, Jeff Saturday's been the interim coach. And then Carolina, Steve Wilks has been the interim coach. I want to talk about that in a bit. All of those jobs are open. But then a couple of other ones that opened up. The Texans fired Lovie Smith. I want to talk about that. But I want to start with Arizona parting ways with Cliff Kingsbury. This was only surprising insofar as they gave both Cliff Kingsbury and Steve Keim those huge extensions last offseason, which has to go back down as like one of the worst contractual decisions of all time. So if not for that extension, this would have been a no-brainer, I think, given Cliff's track record in Arizona. You were dubious of the hire when they made it.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was dubious of the hire. Everyone with sense was dubious of the hire when it was made. It was, I mean, I guess the Jeff Saturday hire is a slightly more shocking hire than Cliff Kingsbury because at least
interim,
Cliff.
Yeah,
it was interim. That's fair. So less shocking now. It was a wild decision given his track record in college. He was not even good enough to be. Well, we don't have to rehash all that. The fact of the matter is, I'm not surprised that they're moving on. I was a bit shocked that I think Michael Bidwell said that Kyler Murray would be involved in some capacity in the hiring of the next coach, which is just, I don't know, it's interesting.
Prompted many, many excellent jokes about Kyler Murray hiring from like the FaZe, like esports jokes, basically. Gamers being hired. This is an interesting spot. It's a complicated spot because, especially with the GM gone, Steve kind of stepped down for health related reasons, but I've been pretty critical of his tenure in Arizona, some of the decisions that they've made. So you've got a team that is tied to a quarterback who has played at a high level, did not play at a high level this year, and then, of course, having torn his ACL, is not going to play in through at least, I believe, October. So, and then you don't have a GM or a head coach. So I think that's the tricky part is kind of like, what's the right order to do things here? Usually it seems to work out well for organizations when they're able to do it in lockstep, when they're finding a GM and head coach who can work together. But this is a tricky spot. It's a roster with a lot of issues. So I'm not sure, Dominique, what's the right move for them? What's the right kind of coach for this organization?
Yeah, a good one. Like they're not in a position where I think that they should be looking like, man, we need this type of coach. We need that type of coach. We need to get the best out of Kyler Murray. Like, I'm not sure that's the thought process that they should be looking for, or we need to address this defense. I actually think going defensive-minded for a head coach might be wise, considering how interesting I think the collection of players they have on defense is, and like how much they have invested in that side of the ball. Like I'd be pretty, if I were Bidwell and I was considering making a hire, I'd be pretty, engaged if a coach came in with like some elaborate plan, or not even elaborate, but like a cohesive plan for how to best optimize their collection of like incredible athletes on defense. And then like Kyler Murray, we'll figure that out. But that would intrigue me.
It's a defense that, yeah, they have like a lot of kind of jack of all trades type players, but no edge rushers really. JJ Watt's retiring. Cornerback is a question. I mean, there's so many issues on that side of the ball. I think they are. They did report they're going to interview Vance Joseph, who's been their defensive coordinator for a while now, and has done a reasonable job with, I think, some major holes with talent. But yeah, if this feels like, I don't know, part of me is like, you want someone who's like a program builder, but we've seen teams fail in that regard. I just want to say, I feel like I have no ability to project who's going to be a good head coach in the NFL. It is interesting that looking at the playoff field, there are a lot of coaches hired this last offseason with teams in the playoffs. Kevin O'Connell, Minnesota, Doug Peterson, who we already knew, had a proven record. Brian Daboll in New York, who approached it, I think, in an interesting way, because he kind of played more of that CEO. He's not calling plays in New York. But again, like, who knew that any of these guys would, I mean, I think that you can point to track records on certain sides of the ball, but for the most part, it's pretty hard to project.
Yeah, we've had these conversations plenty of time, but it's almost impossible to project who's going to be a good head coach for a number of reasons. There's so many variables that we don't take into account. And I think because we exist in the world of sports where it's a lot easier to understand what a position will need, because we think about positions as like players, and you're like, all right, cornerbacks need to be fast and quick and whatever. Like, when you do that for coaches, there's so many different ways to lead a team, to coach a team. You can be heavily involved on one side of the ball or the other. You can be completely like overseeing, kind of like what Mike McCarthy, I guess, is doing right now in Dallas. And also, there really is no training for being a head coach. And so we normally hire like whoever is a great coordinator. But being a coordinator is very different. Like, the job requirements are very different from being a head coach. So like, it's kind of impossible to know who's going to do the job well. One, because they haven't done the job yet. And two, because you don't exactly know how the job is going to. Like, I played for two really good coaches, Mike Shanahan and John Harbaugh. Incredibly different. Like, Mike Shanahan is like offensive, kind of like innovator, all hands on deck on offense all the time. And John Harbaugh was kind of more of a kind of hands off type of head coach, more of a manage the game rather than like game plan. So I don't know. It's hard to figure out what your team needs, and it's hard to figure out what kind of coach the coach is going to be until you actually see it in action.
It does seem like a lot of the best head coaches in the NFL do tend to fall into that latter category, the John Harbaugh category. You look at John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick, guys who have been doing this really well for a long time. I mean, obviously they have their hands, and especially Pete Carroll and Belichick on the defense, but they seem to be good managers above all else.
That seems more flexible to me. It's like that's part of it why I think sometimes you can get a big boom out of a guy if you bring him in. If he's a specialist on one side of the ball, it's possible you could get that. But I think it's more sustainable to have someone who is kind of more CEO style.
I will say, I think when there's when you have a coordinator who's just dominant at doing what he does, that's really Kyle. Appealing. Or D'Amico Ryans, who I have to think everybody in the NFL has number one on their list right now, just because that defense has been so dominant. It's gotten the most out of different types of players with different pedigrees. And by all accounts, he seems beloved, respected by his players. So he seems to have all of the qualities that make it a slam dunk hire, which you never want to say something is, you know, a slam dunk. But if I had to point to a coach in the league, that seems like the obvious one.
Yeah, I like that also. And one thing, they make very few mistakes. And
yes.
I know they have smart players, but all them players ain't smart. Some of those players are being coached well, is what it comes down to. And I noticed that. I think that is one thing that translates. It's like that communication and the few mistakes, I think, is a result of communication and buy-in. And that's just generally something I've learned as I've gotten older, as like a loudmouth kind of know-it-all person, is that what's a lot more useful is buy-in rather than like good ideas, is like actually having people believe in what they're doing.
So that actually brings me back to one thing about the Cliff Kingsbury firing that I did want to ask you about. You know, now the track record of college coaches in the NFL is pretty dismal over the last 10, 15 years, which is funny because Jim Harbaugh, you know, is back in the mix. And Jim Harbaugh was one of the few success stories from college to the NFL. Now, I think it's almost like unfair for Cliff to stand in for college because he was so much less successful at the college level than most of the guys who are considered for these positions. But, you know, when you look at Matt Rhule, for example, in Carolina, who has had that kind of program builder reputation, turned around things in college and then sort of crapped out in the NFL. I have to say, it does seem pretty undeniable that it's a very different skill set, which is not to say that a college coach couldn't be successful in the NFL, but it seems like maybe it would be wise for teams to consider college coaches as coordinators first and not head coaches, because something about that leap from managing a group of, you know, student athletes and running that kind of program, which is, of course, entirely different, doesn't seem to immediately translate to NFL success.
Yeah, I mean, I think the obvious reasons, anybody who's listening to this can like knows all the obvious reasons why trying to manage a bunch of young kids, frankly, there's the turnover is so regular, and the power is I guess is balancing out some now with NIL, but the power is so much in the coach's favor that then when you get to the league, figuring things out and the talent discrepancy. Part of the reason why guys have success, long-term success in college is, yeah, you can build a program, but once you got a program humming, you ain't got to out-scheme nobody. You got 5 stars, they don't. We saw it last night in the championship game. But when you get to the NFL, like even if you are a more talented team, the talent discrepancy between the best team in football and the worst team in football in the NFL is very small. And your coaching and scheming and coordinating and in-game management and like all of that stuff is so much different than in the college game when the clock stops after every first down and you're not going to be in a ton of close games because you're just so much better. Like all that stuff is different in the league.
Which certainly played out in Arizona where you had a coach, Cliff Kingsbury, who's we've talked about this many times, offensive scheme was predicated on a talent advantage. and then when you saw, you know, Jenga pieces being taken out of that tower, so many different injuries over the years, just a failure to make adjustments, I think, and play to the skills of the players he did have. So anyways, that's a tough job. I would argue, though, it's probably more desirable than the Texans' job, which is the other one I want to talk to you about. This is okay, so there's a lot going on here. So I want to address kind of all sides of this, because what happened, there's so many things that happened. The Texans are poised for the number one overall pick. They win their final game. Not only did they don't just win it, they win it in close fashion, in effortful fashion that had to be infuriating to their fans because it took them out of the pole position to pick their quarterback. Players play to win. Lovie Smith coached to win for that two-point conversion as well. And then was out of a job. One would assume that he knew he was out of a job when he already made that choice, which was hilarious. But I want to talk first about the firing of Lovie Smith, because now you've got 2 years where the Texans coaches were one and done, both black head coaches in a league where coaching diversity has been a problem. And I think, you know, the point, we're kind of like, you have to kind of almost like thread a needle when getting at this, because the point is not that David Culley, who was the previous head coach and like won way more games than he had any right to, or Lovie Smith, which was a strange decision, coaching hire, frankly, the point is not that those guys were, you know, should be desirable head coaches in the NFL. The point is that they were both clearly hired as placeholders. And I think that is why the Texans are so deserving of all of the criticism they're getting this week. Because, you know, it's not like, oh, you screwed over these two coaches in firing them. It's that you screwed over them in hiring them with no intention of giving them a shot.
Yeah. it felt like they're just trying to get their numbers up. It's like, you know what? We're going to be bad these next couple of years. Let's add some black coaches to our resume so that when we hire a coach that we believe in, who is undoubtedly going to be white, that we can look back on our tenure and be like, hey, we're not one of those bad teams, because remember, we had three black coaches. And not to mention, we're going to gloss over the fact that we hired two of them back-to-back years. They both overachieved, and we fired both of them. But I think, to the point of hiring people for different jobs, if the job was to come and be a placeholder, then communicating that with the coach and understanding that this is what role we want you to play, like, the racial dynamics in this aside, which is impossible to put aside, but I think for anybody, if you are in this kind of rebuild mode, yeah, I'm trying to, I did my best. I can't cook up some way to make this like seem palatable. That's a thing to do to anybody. Even if you explain it to them, like, yeah, we don't want you to be the long-term answer. Like, that seems to be like, the way to do it is, we want to see what you have. Maybe we know that you're in a tough situation. Maybe you can hold on to this job is like a reasonable way to go about it. But it seemed like at no point.
It's the contrast, though, between this team and so many teams throughout recent NFL history with interim coaches and guys getting 1 year shots. What, you know, Vance Joseph, Steve Wilks come to mind recently. It's the contrast between that approach of saying, okay, we need a placeholder, here's this guy, he's going to be gone in a year, and then Carolina, which gave Matt Rhule, who had zero NFL experience, a gigantic contract. Cliff Kingsbury getting a massive contract based on very little NFL success. That's the problem. It's the contrast. And
Dan Campbell got a monster contract too, I think.
Yeah. And like Dan Campbell, you know, we didn't know he would be good, and he's been good. And like we're not really talking about that, I guess that's what the point I was trying to make. It's not about the individual coaches necessarily. It's about the contrast, the trend lines, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And he got him on the way out.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
It was funny.
That's one of the funniest. And that was a moment that, like, I don't think is overstating his decision to win that game. The fact that that is going to change NFL history. Because now, you know, we're going to talk about this, obviously. The Chicago Bears have the number one overall pick. That pick is for sale. We'll see what happens. But it creates an entire market for it now. Bryce Young could be the quarterback of any team next year. So could CJ Stroud. So that's, we're going to look back on that two-point conversion and the Hail Mary is like one of those like sliding doors moments in the NFL.
Jeff Saturday. civil rights pioneer. because they won on a Hail Mary. Like, I mean, that was unlike, not won on a Hail Mary, but like that was the most unlikely play. Like going for two in a game where neither team's going to make the playoffs, like that's the obvious decision. No one in their right mind is going to be like, hey, let's click the extra point and go to overtime. But the Hail Mary, that was the real hard part. And Jeff pulled that off.
Colts fans, Jeff, you should be a... Jeff did you so many solids. He put you in a position to draft a quarterback, and he took your division competitor out of the number one spot.
Hold on. Take this. Take this for my Jeff Saturday spin. As Jeff came in, and he whooped the Vikings. Or first, they beat the Raiders, and then he whooped the Vikings to show you that he can win. And then he was like, all right, now you know what? Now let's work on this pick, guys. Let's throw this Vikings game. Let's throw the rest of these games. Let's work on this pick. That's called coaching. Extend that, man.
One last question about these seats. Which do you think is is the most desirable? So just to remind people: Texans, Cardinals, Colts, Broncos, Panthers. I don't think the Saints and the Bucs are going to fire their head coach, but they might. So I would throw out those two teams as possibilities. Sounds like the Cowboys won't. I don't think the Chargers will. And then there's the Rams, because there's all these ongoing rumors about Sean McVay leaving. So I'll throw the Rams in there, too, because I don't know. That feels more likely than not right now. So Panthers, Broncos, Cardinals, Texans, Colts, Rams. If you were D'Amico Ryans, which job would you take?
I mean, I guess it depends on the contract and expectations.
Just roster.
Just roster. I think Broncos have the best roster. Of those teams,
they do.
Do you want to?
Are you?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I know I don't want to go there with their dearth of draft picks and their overpaid quarterback right now. No, I don't want that. Nice. The rest of those things. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe I would be attracted to Indy because there's hope in that division and. There's a blank enough slate that I think that you would get a longer timeline to build something. I think some of those other options, the Cardinals, they've already paid their quarterback. So you're going to have to make it soon. You're going to have to make it happen soon. You're not going to get 6 years. I think Indy might be smart enough to recognize that they're in a similar position as the Panthers were and as the Lions were. And they're going to need to pay somebody and give them 6 or 7 years.
I like the Panthers job, which, by the way, Steve Wilks, again, overperformed yet again expectations with, like, trade away Christian McCaffrey, starting Sam Darnold, they're winning games. He absolutely deserved, and it seems like the players really are behind him over there.
That's another division that is...
that's why I like the Panthers, because I think that division is wide open. And I really like that roster. Like, I like what they did with the offensive line. It's coming around. We've talked about a lot of young talent on that defense. They just need a quarterback. And I have to think, given how aggressive they've been about pursuing quarterback in the past, they're going to be aggressive this year, hopefully making better choices. But I think that's a good job. So that's the best one to me. All right. There's going to be a lot more coming down the pike on this, but... It begins. The coaching carousel begins. All right, let's take a quick break, come back, and talk about some football. With Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, every bet earns with Caesars Rewards. That means whether you win or lose, you're always earning towards perks like free stays at iconic Caesars properties, game tickets, dining, and more. And if you haven't started yet, here's a reminder. Your first bet is on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code OMAHAFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet.
Must be 21 or older, offer valid, and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bet credit $1,250. Must be used within 14 days of receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. No time to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK, 467-369.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay, we're back. Winners and woofs.
We're still calling them woof. That's the thing. That's still
I remember to do it this time.
Okay, I thought we stopped.
I don't like calling people losers.
Okay, that's fair.
I'll start with a winner. I have your Kansas City Chiefs. Got the one seed, got the bye, put up maybe one of the most disrespectful offensive performances I've seen. I want to actually talk about them, though, for another week. Well, first of all, I think they're my Super Bowl pick. I feel like, you know, this offense was the best offense coming into the season, the best offense in the middle of the season, the best offense at the end of the season. They are diverse. They can beat you so many different kinds of ways. They can run the ball really well. Patrick Mahomes is playing quarterback at an extraordinarily high level. The reason, though, I want to put them as a winner, aside from getting the bye, is I do think that this defense has made some pretty significant improvements down the stretch. That's actually what really jumped out to me in Week 18, Dominique. It wasn't the offense, you know, stunning on Las Vegas, but it was that pass rush. I mean, Chris Jones taking over the game, but, like, you have guys like, and I've talked about this being a weakness in the past, I think George Karlaftis has, who was their first-round draft pick, who's the defensive end, has been much more disruptive as the weeks have gone by, stout against the run as well. And I think they're figuring some things out in coverage. I don't think they're, you know, one of the better defenses in the NFL or anything like that, but I watched them and I thought, okay, they look good enough, and I think that's all they need.
Yeah, they don't have to be one of the better defenses in the NFL. They have to make some plays here or there. They got to make some key plays, and I think no one wants to say they have a bend but don't break defense, but I think that's a reasonable thing to have when you have Patrick Mahomes. If I were headed into these playoffs, I would be as focused as Andy Reid is on offensive production in the red zone. That's how focused I would be on defense in the red zone, because their teams are going to get to the red zone on them. They can't give up big, long touchdowns. Get to the red zone, it's really hard to score down there, and get really good at forcing people to kick field goals, because Patrick Mahomes and teams are going to go for it, and you're going to stop them every now and then.
Always.
And it's like that's what I'd be locked in on. All of that stuff, and to the degree that I may not even be game planning for the middle of the field. Like, we're just going to run vanilla stuff and then try to win in the red zone. And also, like, on third down situations, like, I'd take some chances because you want to turn – or I wouldn't compromise my defense. But if I'm looking at – to the point of Chris Jones, the way he's playing right now, like, I don't care about stopping the run. Like, if you get a play action, Chris, go ahead and run through. Like, assume that it's not going to be a run. If they get 8 yards on a run, so be it. But if you sack them, we're getting the ball back, and Patty is going to score for us.
Especially when you're looking at their two primary competitors in AFC, the Bills and the Bengals. both of whom have some pretty significant weaknesses in the offensive line. Actually, both teams, I think, kind of in the same spots. And now the Bengals, you saw with Alex Kappa, is their starting right guard being hurt. Suddenly the entire right side of that line is an issue. Both teams, too, that I don't think are like particularly good rushing teams. Quietly, the Bengals really struggled to run the ball on the stretch at the end of the season. Bills ran it better, but that's obviously still not their strength. So, yeah, I think if you're the Chiefs, it really comes down to, you know, making some plays through the pass rush and being opportunistic on the back end, which is kind of their calling card. I thought the safeties played really well in, you know, last game of the season, yeah. Thornhill and Reed. And, you know, you can get them.
Yeah.
They can get got. Yeah. But...
Yeah, but your defense is gonna get got too by Patrick Mahomes. Are you gonna get them more times than he gonna get you? And the chances are probably not. And the biggest reason why, I mean, the AFC is hard as hell, but their path is as easy as it's, yes. as it's gonna get, given how they're just gonna have to play either the Bengals or the Bills, eventually. And
dude, I would much rather play the Bills. If I was the Chiefs, yeah. just because I think the way to play the Chiefs is to play man, and the Bills don't do that. The Bills cornerback opposite Tre'Davious White is a huge problem. Mm-hmm. And the Bengals, like Lou Anarumo just seems to have Kansas City's number. I mean, at this point you'd say, well, okay, how many times, right? Like, can they, but I don't think it's just scheme. I also just think that they have like the personnel to match up pretty well with them. I'm not saying I wouldn't pick Kansas City, but I'm just saying in terms of matchups, if I was the Chiefs, I'd want to avoid them.
How outrageous is it that they've lost to the Chiefs lost to both the Bengals and the Bills this season? Lost to the Bengals last year. Could have lost to the Bills last year, and we still are completely confident in them. Like, they're still going to beat these teams that are, like, frankly better than them in some ways.
I don't I don't know. I mean, maybe it's false confidence. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I should be questioning it more. But they did ring around the rosy in week 18. How do you feel about, like... I feel like that was something where they were like, okay, it would be too stupid to do this in the playoffs, but
yeah, we got to get it out.
We got to get it out there. Yeah, it's like, you know, like at the end of the year when you are just trying, like you're doing all your expense reports or you're just trying to like get stuff in under the bell. I feel like they were like, come on, we got to get it at some point. National audience, you know.
People were like upset about it. I was not. Like, I didn't find it disrespectful in any way. It's like, I don't know. I'm with it. It's fun.
You know what struck me about that? And we can move on after this. And this is another part of the reason why the Chiefs are so terrifying. So they run that play. It's a direct snap. McKinnon pitches it back to Mahomes, who gets it to Tony, who the Raiders actually covered up pretty well. He makes a guy miss because he's insane. And then on the next play, they go back to Tony, who again makes guys miss. And I was thinking, damn, like, you don't, like, you know what I actually flashed me back to in the moment? Tyreek Hill getting the ball in the flat and getting stopped by the Bengals on the goal line. Do you remember that?
I remember
moment?
That was the beginning of the end for them last season.
Yeah. But I was thinking, like, Tony has this, I'm not saying he's better than Tyreek Hill, guys. I obviously don't believe that. But he has this like insane elusiveness that's such a weapon in the flat, like when things are covered up in the flats. And also he had to have been tired then to go back and like, you know, get another play. And like, he is just such a unique player, and he's a little bit boom or bust. I understand that. But, like, when he booms, what a nightmare for defenses he is.
The suddenness that he moves with is impressive and fun, excuse me, and terrifying on the other side of the ball. The idea that you can just give it to him in a one-on-one situation, it feels like he's a gang-tackle type of guy. One guy's not going to stay in front of him. And that's just another problem that you have to account for when you're playing against the Chiefs.
Especially since defenses will probably play more shell coverage against them. You know, as in the playoffs, you have to think that Cincinnati will take that approach. So his ability to get yards after the catch is pretty paramount, especially if Travis Kelce's covered up. All right, who is your first woof or your only woof? And then we'll do your winner at the end.
Wolf the Jets. I mean, remember like midseason when we all were like, oh, the Jets
are
really good.
They were 7-3.
Yeah, the Jets are on a run. They're going to, if they can figure this quarterback situation out, and Mike White, oh, yeah, Mike White's the answer. They won, I guess pre-Mike White, they went to Lambeau and won back when that was the thing that the Lions didn't also do. And we were really high on him. Sauce was wearing cheese heads. He's still freaking incredible. But just to go from where they were to where they are now, where there doesn't feel like a ton, like they still have a ton of talent. They still have Garrett Wilson, who's great. Sauce, who's great. Young guys on rookie deals who are going to be great for a long time for them. Quinnen Williams, like this is a team that's going to be good. But the big question mark is still going to be there. And I think you combine that big question mark with the way that they ended the season, and it feels like a wolf to me.
You know how woofy it is? When the season ended, I think I put out a tweet that was like, hey, Jets fans, like, silver linings, your roster's really good. All you need is a quarterback. And Jets fans were like, even if we want one, we're not going to get him. And they hate Mike LaFleur and our coaching staff and our GM, and we're so screwed. I was like, damn, the vibes are bad. Like, it was actually like the lack of belief seemingly in,
yeah,
it's
a sad fan base. It's a defeated fan base that, like, even when they were doing well, hearing from them, it's like, it's very different than the other team in this city's vibes.
Yeah, right. We'll talk about them. Spoiler. But yeah, it's, I guess that what I was trying to say was like, what? Well, but you know what you got to do. There's no confusion. This isn't like, yeah. I don't know. I guess a lot of teams know they need a quarterback this offseason, which is going to make it kind of insane. But
do
you
they
know,
need a coordinator too? That's, what do you
a
think?
Lot of them yeah. are pretty disastrous. I mean, I don't know. I kind of feel like yeah. the quarterback play was so bad. I don't really know what he's supposed to do. But I think the question, though, for the Jets is, do you, like, what are the resources you're willing to expend to get a quarterback? Because they don't pick high in the draft. And which quarterback, right? So there's kind of two ways this could go. There's the draft, and then there's the free agency trade market. I think this is a team that's prime for the latter category, part because there's just too many teams picking ahead of them that need quarterbacks, but also because this is a win-now roster. This is the roster that should be in the playoffs, that if they had competent quarterback play, would be in the playoffs instead of Miami. So you are looking around the league at like a Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo as a free agent. And then, you know, bigger dreams would be like Tom Brady or Lamar Jackson. And I guess for Jets fans, there's skepticism that, like, they're probably, they saw Derek Carr play the season and they're like, really, Derek Carr? That's the best we can do. But honestly, guys, you would be in the playoffs with Derek Carr. Oh, yeah. I say that with like 100% confidence. So, you know,
yeah, that, I often think about when the Super Bowl, that the most recent Super Bowl that the Broncos won, is we often talk about how important it is to have a quarterback on a rookie deal. And I think having a future Hall of Famer on a rookie deal is just as valuable. And that was a big reason why the Broncos, not a big reason, the reason, frankly, the Broncos won the Super Bowl when Peyton Manning was a shell of himself. And that defense was incredible. They had Von Miller on a rookie deal. And he's a game changer. And you can do things around that. And so the idea that they have a couple game changers on rookie deals right now. And
yeah.
and Garrett and Sauce. That's, y'all got a window right now that whatever you got to trade away, whatever contracts you got to sign, it's okay. You better yes. go and lean in on it. Because when you start paying them, which you should, it's going to be real hard. That's going to be the point where you need to have a quarterback on a rookie deal to make up for the fact that you're paying these guys.
Oh, I think they should offer the Godfather deal for Lamar Jackson.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Ravens will take it. This is going to be obviously the story of the offseason. But the guy, Deshaun Watson contract that he wants, and those that, yeah. the trade, the Jets should absolutely do that. I also think, you know, throw whatever you can at Tom Brady, and now who knows what will go into that decision. If I'm Brady, I'd rather play for the Jets than the Raiders, though, which is another team he's been linked to. Yeah. So there are some options for them. They just need to be deeply aggressive, because this is like the most important Jets offseason, like, in quite some time. So, all right, that was your woof. My woof is sort of similar in some ways. The Green Bay Packers, just such a disappointing end to the season. And I think a lot of questions headed into this offseason, starting with the quarterback position. You know, Aaron Rodgers says at the end of the season, he's going to take some time.
Don't laugh at Aaron.
Okay. I think he's going to come back. So
yeah, I think so too.
So starting from there, like, I guess this is what I wanted to ask you, because if he comes back, how good are they?
Yeah.
You know,
The wild thing is, to me, when we think about this team, is looking back on Aaron Rodgers this entire season, he was more the problem than any of the other things that we tried to blame. Is the young receivers, by the end of the year, they weren't the problem. The defense, by the end of the year, they weren't the problem. But you know who hadn't really played all that well in this run of wins that they had and played really poorly in that loss? It's Aaron Rodgers. So I don't know why they can't time it up where they all can do the same thing well. Because, like, Christian Watson had 100 yards in a game when Aaron Rodgers played poorly. He's the number one receiver. Like, he plays like a number one receiver at times. To be able to do it over the course of an entire season, then I can put him up there in that conversation. But he's a guy that you have to game plan for, which I think is what you're looking for. He's a guy that you're not just going to walk out there and say, anybody cover him. You're going to find out where he is and game plan for him, which I think is what they need. They have that. Their offensive line, I honestly anticipated that their offensive line was bad because of Bakhtiari in and out, and also because Aaron Rodgers was struggling. I was like, oh, they probably not protect him. Their offensive line was good all year long. And so I guess you could spin it as a positive, is like, if the only thing you have to worry about is can Aaron Rodgers play good enough to win, then you're in good shape. But it's a real worry. He didn't throw for 300 yards this whole season and not in their game. Yeah. That's mind-blowing to me.
You know what really got me about the final game, I guess, is just he wasn't moving.
Yeah.
I don't maybe he completed like one pass outside the pocket. He didn't. He was very ineffective when he was pressured, which wasn't like a ton in that game, but like when he was pressured. And I think that's what I would be so concerned about as the Packers fan next season, because Rodgers has always been like really good at everything. But a lot of what made him special as a quarterback is he is a playmaker, you know, and if he's not moving, if he's not creating, which is funny, because I think when they were winning games, there were actually some points where you saw him using his legs more. And when he uses when he did, good things would happen. But it's that sort of lack of mobility and the sort of second reaction playmaking that he was so good at for so long. If that's gone, it's not like a Russell Wilson thing, because they're still like a competent offense. They're just not explosive enough.
Yeah.
I think that's ultimately like what killed them against Detroit, is just like that lack of explosion. I mean, Jared Goff made the big throw instead.
Yeah. And is that a mindset or is that a loss of athleticism? I find it hard to believe that he lost all of that athleticism in one offseason. So I think it's like an approach to the game or something. And because we did see it in a couple of these recent games, I saw him do it like once or twice. So yeah, I don't know. You need those big plays, and you need that off-script and stuff. Like, that's what we talk about in this modern NFL, is like what separates most of these like perennial contenders from everybody else, is they got those quarterbacks that it doesn't matter. And like, even Joe Burrow, who we talked about.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Joe Burrow is so creative. Like,
yeah, he doesn't have the athleticism or the crazy arm talent that some of these other top quarterbacks have, but he still like does creative things to make plays when they need it outside of structure. And Aaron's going to have to do that again.
It almost feels like you need a quarterback that the defense has to at least account for in man coverage. And Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes, some of their most punishing runs are like 7 yard gains for first down when a defense is in like cover two man. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, and if you're not, if you don't have a quarterback who's willing to do that part, doesn't have to be, you know, like Justin Fields out there. It is very limiting, and it certainly makes things easier on the life of defensive coordinators. And yeah, I think that's a big question mark for Rodgers, and just a brutal end to the season for Packers fans, man. Like, I, you know, being able to win it in and not coming up or coming up short in that moment sucks. All right, let's finish with a winner.
Giants. I'm staying in the city of New York, which is where I am right now. I think that they are one of very few teams, which I guess I would include your Seahawks in this conversation, of teams that it don't matter what happens going forward. The only reason why I chose the Giants over the Seahawks, because they both had like surprisingly successful seasons, is because I think the Giants actually have a chance to advance. They're matching up with the Vikings and looking at potential upsets. That's one. If they can figure out what to do with Justin Jefferson, I think that Vikings defense is one that stresses me out on a regular basis when I watch them. And like the missed assignments, the missed tackles, all the issues are suggest that even this very limited Giants offense can score some points. If they can slow down Justin Jefferson, they could win this game.
Can I ask you a question? Okay, so I'm totally in agreement with you. And this game for me is going to come down to the wire, as it should, because the last time these two teams played, it came down to a very long Greg Joseph field goal. It's great. Or no, is Daniel Carlson? Who's the Vikings kicker? I'm forgetting now.
I don't know. I don't do kickers. I know a couple of them.
Or Carlson used to be the.
If it ain't Tuck, I don't care.
Point is, it came down to a field goal. This game is going to be really, really interesting. And I kind of think both offenses have a little bit of an edge over both defenses in certain ways. Although, Giants pass rush against that Vikings offensive line, there's an issue there. I think the Vikings can also cause some issues up front. But let me ask you this. Daniel Jones has been really good this season. Mm-hmm. I outperformed expectations. Probably the best thing he's done is taking care of the football, and he's been put in, I think, pretty good positions. You know, he's not really pushing the ball downfield that much. Reads are there, pretty simple. Does it seem to you, however, like we've gone through 18 weeks and defenses still don't account for him as a runner? Am I crazy? I feel like I'm taking, sometimes when I watch this Giants team, I'm like, yo, that's zone read. Like, he's going to keep it. What are we doing out here? Like, where's the scraping? I just feel like sometimes, tell me I'm wrong.
I'm with you. No, you're not wrong. It's surprising that they don't line up against the Giants the same way some teams do against Lamar Jackson, where it's like, look, we know you're capable of throwing the ball, but we're going to make you do it. And they don't do that to Daniel Jones. I don't know why. And even aside from lining up in some more unconventional defenses, you're right. Like, they just misread it. Like, oh, it's no way he's going to keep it.
Swear to God, there is no one on, like, more than any rushing quarterback in the NFL that I can remember. He's like, all right.
It is his face too.
Don't
just
mind
looks
if
like,
I do, you know.
He does have a "don't mind if I do" face too. It just, that's what he.
I don't get it.
I wish I had an answer for you other than
profiling.
It's just sneaky, sneaky fast. And he's once sneaky fast, always sneaky fast.
It's not sneaky. There's nothing sneaky about
it. It's always sneaky. It's it. You can't unsneak it. No matter how many 25-yard runs he goes on, it's always going to be sneaky.
I don't know why. It's not always. There are sometimes, you know, you'll see a spy on him or the linebacker accounting for him. But, like, there's just more than any other quarterback, I feel like. It's just not accounted for.
I told you about the time my rookie year when we were going to play. It was my first career start, I think. And we were going to play Byron Leftwich, and we installed a spy in practice that week, and I was like, I'm a rookie. And I don't think we ever called it in the game, but like we practiced it, and I was like, the f- are we doing? Really? We had it in just in case. Like, what is going on?
I feel like Jameis got that treatment a little bit. Like, or maybe not treatment, but I remember.
Yeah.
I don't want to call anyone out, but I feel
like. Yeah. Some commentators like, hey.
And everyone's like.
Nope. Yeah, we had it in. I don't think we called it, but I remember an install that week like, oh, really? We need a spy? Who's going to spy him? I think we can put a D-tackle in for that spy.
I like the Giants defense. I think that it's I mean, the secondary is still totally outmanned, but I do think they've the pass rush has gotten better and better as the season has gone on. And that'll be the other thing I'm curious to see in this game is Martindale's approach to the blitz, because, you know, there have been spots where he has actually dialed it back, accounting for the fact that he has an advantage this year with Dexter Lawrence, Thibodeau, Ojulari. But against the last time these two teams played, he blitzed and got punished for it in a couple of big moments. That ultimately is why they lost, which isn't to say it wouldn't have happened if he didn't blitz. And they had some success blitzing as well. They did bring down Kirk Cousins. So that, to me, is one of the more interesting chess matches here.
Yeah, we talked about this before the season started. I picked them as, like, my potential surprise team, in part because I was like, when you have a talent discrepancy on defense, this Wink Martindale boom or bust style is the way to go. But I've noticed, and I'm not sure if the numbers agree with me, but in watching them, they blitz. They aren't nearly as aggressive as I remember him being at the beginning of the season, or particularly when he was with the Ravens. And it's probably because they don't have the talent in the back end to feel as comfortable to be as aggressive. And also maybe it's because Dexter Lawrence and the D-line is better than you think. But with Justin Jefferson out there, I feel like part of the Wink Martindale, part of the reason why I'd be nervous is it's not a surprise. If it were a surprise, then I'd be more comfortable with it. And if it's not a surprise, I don't expect Kirk Cousins to do any reading. It's like, oh, there's a blitz. Where's JJ? Throw it over there. And just, it's only good things can happen. And so, I don't know if there's some way to get some double team on Justin Jefferson while also, well, they did a lot of this. Like,
he did, yeah, it didn't. Well, sorry.
Yeah, no, I was just thinking about that. Yeah, that's not going to matter when Justin Jefferson is being Justin Jefferson. So, forget that. But they do a lot of what I noticed more than like the zero blitzes that Wink became kind of famous for is they do a lot of overloads where they end up only sending four people.
Yes.
But they show them all to one side, so they still get a free runner.
I've noticed that they've done that a lot more, and I should just ask someone at ESPN. I was wondering how that's accounted for in our system.
Yeah, it's I ran a little test to figure it out, and they count it as a blitz, which that's why his blitz numbers. If I'm right, I think his blitz numbers are much higher than
he's actually blitzing,
sending more than four. Yeah, so like I think you can use Next Gen to control for how many rushers.
Oh, actually, no. Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, the Vikings are down to their, like, backup center, potentially. So, Dexter Lawrence, I mean, they're going to have to double-team him, which should create some one-on-one opportunities for Thibodeau and Ojulari. I ran, before these teams played in week whenever it was, I grabbed Kirk Cousins' numbers against the blitz to Jefferson, and it was unbelievable. I think he has, like, a QBR of like 99 throwing to him when he blitzed. And this was the game too where you remember the Jefferson touchdown where they bracketed him.
Yep.
The cornerback had inside leverage and he sort of like looped around him and then went under the bracket. It was
ridiculous.
Like just so stupid. Okay, the Giants are winners. Can I ask you one more question before we wrap? I picked I am a voter this year for the AP
Awards.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Yay.
And I picked Brian Daboll as my coach of the year.
Oh, yeah. You don't believe in a private ballot?
people ask me anyway. I can't,
I like that.
Do you think Kevin O'Connell should have gotten some looks? That's the only thing I would. Okay.
I don't. I think Kyle Shanahan is a reasonable person, like, to be right now a favorite amongst most people.
Coaching good players, but yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's on his third quarterback. And
yes.
They are considered by a lot of people. I'm not sure what the betting odds are, but it's not absurd to think that they should be in a Super Bowl. And that's absurd on your third quarterback. Yeah. And I think a lot of it credit needs to – I mean, it's just a good organization.
He was third for me. I had him third.
Yeah. And you had O'Connell second?
No, Doug Peterson second.
Yeah, Doug Peterson is a good one too. But I think the argument against Doug Peterson is this is how good they were.
The bar was like, hell.
Yeah, it's like.
And he came into a pretty, roster was never as bad as it seemed.
Right. It's just whatever.
Yeah. I will say, I do think O'Connell has done a good job, though. The Vikings, I know we kind of joke a lot about them being lucky and winning these close games, but they also do a lot of things that allow them to win those close games. I think situationally, they're a very good team. They've avoided penalties, which is something we usually attribute to coaches. And I think, just to give this roster a little bit of credit, I think it was better than we gave it credit for coming into the season. I mean, guys like Patrick Peterson is having, one of the best seasons. Z'Darrius Smith, they made good moves. And it's a team that I think always had a higher floor than we thought because of the caliber of veterans on the roster. So,
yeah, I mean, I really like from a coaching standpoint what they've been doing with Justin Jefferson. And, it's hard to do wrong with Justin Jefferson, but finding ways to create he's the one guy that people are focusing on.
Yes.
When you come in, and he finds ways to put him in advantageous positions, even though Kirk Cousins is going to throw it to him whether he's open or not, and he's probably going to catch it either way, they still find ways to allow him to get open.
The single biggest, I think, reason why the season has gone the way is just Kirk Cousins being which is smart. All right, Dominique, I always say that when you're on with me. All right, this will work out.
Thank you.
I will see you next week when we have some playoff games to talk about.
Ooh. Wow. Can't wait.
Bye.